right about now, we would hear a voice of Angela Mariani. Hello, Angela.
Hi.
Welcome to Spokane Public Radio.
Thank you. And, delighted to be here.
The producer of Harmonia, do you even care to say since when?
Oh, yes, I will. And in fact, this is kind of an exciting year because the program became syndicated in 1995. So this is 20 years now.
Nice.
And that the program has been syndicated in some way. It actually began in 1991.
But well, the way on a local station, and then grew, and we picked it up just right around then. It used to be in the evening, and then the way things changed, we ultimately brought it to our Monday at 11. And this is going to sound a little self-serving, but it has to do with a third party that's in this building, but not in this room, involved in this, and that's Carrie Boyce.
Yes, indeed.
So right. Talk about his role within that.
Well, we worked together at WFIU in Bloomington for many years, and he was working on marketing and publicity and that sort of thing for Harmonia and also for the station. Mm-hmm. And actually then worked in production and was a producer. So he actually played many roles over the years at WFIU. So, yes, we go back a long way, as they say, yeah.
And, of course, the beauty of that, and even kind of the subplot in my talking to you now, is that idea of taking a local program, because we all produce our local programs, and how and when it can grow. Mm-hmm. What felt like the mandate or the reason that Harmonia could break its bonds of merely a local program?
Well, one reason was it got a very strong reaction locally very quickly and became quite popular, which I was honored to find that out and flattered. And because it got such a strong local reaction, some of the folks at WFIU said, hey, you know, maybe others would also really like to hear this. So, of course, this was back when, now everything is sort of done on the internet, but this was back when you had to purchase time on the satellite to make something.
So it was a big deal.
It was a big deal. It was quite expensive. And so the first thing we did was to do a couple of pilots for people to listen to and to kind of just test the waters and see if people would be interested in picking it up. And we got a very strong response. And so that, you know, kind of carried the process forward.
And WFIU is in Bloomington, Indiana, where the monolith of Indiana University and their famous music department is, complete with a highly respected early music contingent to that music department. As you became popular, how did you identify the audience beyond the normal early music audience that would have known from WFIU, but to a greater sense of people who love music beyond a specialty audience?
Well, I think for me, one of the things that I always felt in terms of, you know, writing the scripts and crafting the show and this sort of thing was that if people would just hear the music, they would like it. I didn't really think that early music needed to be marginalized in any way, a sort of a special, that you had to know something special in order to enjoy it or this kind of thing. So I liked presenting it that way. You know, this music has stories that are interesting and that are engaging historical information. And, you know, I would tell some of those stories. And to me, a lot of it was about demystifying it. As I said, I don't think it has to be a special thing. I don't think you have to know anything special to enjoy an early music concert. And there's a lot that's appealing about it. I think in some ways, one of the things that's appealing about it is that a lot of the musical language of the ancient music is familiar to us, and yet we're hearing this music that maybe we've never heard before. So there's an appeal of new music at the same time that there's an appeal of something that's deeply familiar, because there are aspects, especially of the very early music and the modes and the scales and the kind of musical language that was used with some of the really ancient music that I think we respond to pretty strongly.
I'm kind of amused by the fact that within our lifetimes, every 5, 10, or 20 years, there's complete turnovers in musical languages. Harmonia's mandate, what, covers 6, 7, 8 centuries?
Yes, pretty much. You know, one thing I think that, for me, instead of thinking about early music as a kind of specific repertoire, I've often thought of it as more of a process, a performance process. To me, the idea is that the whole historical performance movement, I think, came out of a kind of historical imagination and historical curiosity about ancient music and how it might have sounded. And what do we have to do in order to discover how it might have sounded? What kind of research do we have to do, of course? Sure, but then what do we have to play? And how did they approach music? Because that's very important. So much of music is the process involved in creating it. And when you get music that comes from a time when the notation was not the same, and the notation omitted a lot of musical information, so you know that there was a lot of performer contribution. There was a lot of invention. There was a lot of a lot more was left to the performer in that music. Well, that creates an interesting dilemma, because, you know, as a performer now, you've got to contribute that yourself. You've got to invent it yourself. So that opens the door for a lot of very interesting investigation and research, and as I said, use of one's own historical imagination and so on. So I think, I'm not exactly I'm losing a little bit my thread here.
No, but I see where you're going, because implied in that is that we haven't learned everything about it, and so there's nothing new to learn, and it's not just a museum, just a dead recreation of something from 400 years ago.
Exactly. It's very much a living process. That's what I was trying to, that's where I was going with this. It's very much a living process for the musicians who are involved in it. And I think that really good performances of early music, I think that the listener can tell. They don't have to know anything special, but they can, that imagination comes across, that process comes across, that the fact that the performer is putting themselves into this music to a certain, in a way that is not better than the performance of a different kind of music, it's just different.
Mm-hmm. And so there, and then kind of the relations, even when I opened this morning with the Philip Pickett thing, where he had a contemporary composer do things in that style, is there some sense that some of that music can be used as material for musicians to make music now?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
And in the case of something like medieval music, you know, having played that for many years, you know, we could... If we got into the question of what exactly is medieval, we would be here until 11 o'clock or 12. But because a lot of the extant music, the extant notation, is just very much like you would see a jazz chart and it only has the melody. You see, say, a troubadour song or something, and there's only the melody. And you have to decide what you're going to do. You're either going to sing that a cappella or you're going to create some kind of performance of it. To be honest, there's a very strong element of new music that's being made in any performance of medieval music as well. Mm. So it's a very wonderful and I think it's an opportunity for musicians to really express a lot of their own creativity at the same time that they're working with this very old musical material.
And we'll keep hearing that on Harmonia, which you continue to work with. Angela Mariani, my guest, I think we can call you the originator of Harmonia. I know you didn't do it alone, but
no, I wasn't alone.
Certainly the voice for Harmonia, happening to be in Spokane. Thanks for dropping around to visit us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
The theme from Harmonia, which is broadcast at 11 o'clock on Monday mornings on Spokane Public Radio. Treat to have Angela Mariani come through town and visit us.